5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
The American retail collapse is growing global. The method to make money out of Bitcoin, no one is really talking about. And my interview with Tom Leongo. So that's and more on today's episode of Hof Profit. So check it out, hofprofit.com/podcast. And don't forget to share, like, retweet, and take a completely free subscription. And I don't know if it is, but something is not going really well. It's already the seventh time I had to record the opening, so, well, don't be expect too much from me today. So how are you doing, my lovely podcast friends? I'm happy to have you aboard. Let's have a quick chat about the retail shops, because shop chain after chain after chain is filing for bankruptcy, or they are closing shops, and people blame Amazon. And if you look in the United States, 77 million square feet retail space is vacant. And I'm going to ask you a question. Who is paying for it? Because real estate is always financed with other people's money. So who is, when is this going to drop up and get up in the ongoing collapse and financing? Will this be the trigger for the next real stock market collapse? I don't know, but I really, this could be the big thing. This could be the thing you need to check out. So if you just look at the fact that Toys R Us is bankrupt, Payless is bankrupt, Wet Seal closed all shops and is now history. Banks are closing shops, and this is where, and just look at, for example, a company like Subway, which is really big, it's a fast food chain, it's really smart what they are doing, and the big question is when they will fix and who can we fix it. And I think that the real reason that the shops are closing is not that we are spending online, that we buy stuff online on Amazon or those things. If you look at all the shopping, less than 10% of our shopping is online. But is the real problem not that, if you just look at the United States, where 51 million households are struggling to buy food. They are struggling to pay rent. So is the real problem not that simply there is not enough money in the people's pockets to spend the money? We need to, the people need to make the money, spend the money slowly on, then you get out. But people are with their eyeballs in debt. And yes, what Amazon is doing could kill local business, could, but it's not like, but you can also use Amazon as your sales channel. Let's see it like this. At some shops you have to fill out a form if you buy something. At other shops you can just bring your money. Hey, the shops with great customer service are gonna win. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones, so you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. hofprofit.com/passport. I say hofprofit.com/passport. We all know Bitcoin is highly popular, and everyone is talking about the fact that it's unregulated, and that's one of the things that I really love about it. But it's really problematic to make money out of it. And that's something that we need to look at, because there is a way to make money out of it. That way method is rare, it's something different, so that's why you are tuning into my show, the rare method to make money. To explain something, if you have Bitcoin is not made by the government, but you have to mine it. And the more Bitcoin there is, the tougher it gets to mine one. There is a maximum on the number of Bitcoins that can be mined. That's, I believe, 20 million. And Bitcoin is just one coin. There are a lot of cryptocurrencies, and they are extremely popular. And there is a real problem, and that's the energy bill. If you look at this moment, 0.5% of the world energy is being used to mine Bitcoin. And then we're talking about one popular crypto. And to give you an idea, this is the same level of energy that is being used for a country as Argentina in Latin America. You know, all the energy they consume is what we need to mine cryptos. And here's the big problem, man. If you look at China is subsidizing the its crypto miners because otherwise they cannot survive. In the United States, energy is too expensive to do this without subsidy, and there is a problem. Venezuela was subsidizing it with its oil, but is no longer doing so because they can't refine the oil. So Iceland is at the same time more and more the destination to play the Bitcoin thing because they have the energy dirt cheap out of the ground, so they get it in. And this is the interesting part. At the same time, wind energy and solar energy are becoming dirt cheap. That's good. We can literally, if you can make money with solar energy if you put it on your roof, at least we are now running the calculations for, I will make money out of it, so I will put some solar panels on the roof and earn some bucks. And here is the interesting part. No one is talking about this, but this is the problem. The problem is that we need the energy. And so what you need to do if you want to make money out of Bitcoin on a more certain way than go trading and speculating is get into renewable energy and into those fields. So I strongly encourage you to check out my profit energy package, the wind energy report, the solar energy report. Just check it out, because the interesting field is that we all have to check it out and we can make money out of it. Just, I'm talking, well, the shops are closing, about making some bucks, just money in our bank.
The Brexit is here, Article 50 is triggered, the talks are going on, unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the profitable Brexit report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals, finally also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofprofit.com/Brexit.
Yeah, well, having it all said, it's time for me to go and to introduce you to Tom Luongo. Tom is a newsletter author. He writes really interesting stuff. I strongly suggest you check it out, because what you need to realize is the perspectives he's talking about, he takes to a global scene. And the interesting field is that geopolitics and global affairs have influence on your investments, on your life, and just check it out. So I would simply say have fun, and here is today's exclusive interview. I don't believe in hard stuff interview, just a friendly chat. Okay, let's get it going.
Sure.
First, hey, very welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invite, I appreciate it.
You are publisher of the Gold Goat Guns newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about?
The Gold Goats and Guns newsletter is, it starts with commodities first, because that's really where my area of expertise is in terms of investment strategy and investment and understanding, right? So commodities, gold, cryptocurrencies are really the three main areas of investment. And then, but the idea behind the newsletter is both to understand the intersection between geopolitics and how these markets, because all three of those markets are very geopolitically charged, and they're also mm-hmm. the markets that people care the most about. And so you have to understand the geopolitics in order to be able to understand how and why they move the way they do. And then the idea behind Gold, Goats, and Guns is that there's three sub-portfolios in the portfolio strategy, where the gold portfolio is a high-yield kind of streaming income-focused mm-hmm. portfolio of like MLPs and royalty companies, things like – not that I have companies like Franco-Nevada in the portfolio, but say, you know, Franco-Nevada and Silver Wheaton, those are kinds of streaming companies, and or closed-end funds that are high yield as well. And then in the GOATS portfolio is kind of like producers, those that, you know, so you've got kind of like financiers, and then the banking industry portion of the commodity industry, and then you've got producers that are high, you know, blue chips, high yield blue chips, or growing mining companies or whatever, and you know, for The linchpin in that particular portfolio is Gazprom, for example. And then and the guns portfolio would be sub portfolios, your defense. These are your hedges against your core portfolio strategy to ensure that, you know, if your main thesis isn't correct, well, then you have a little bit of a hedge, that will cover you if your, you know, fundamental, investment thesis is wrong. And so, you know, my fundamental investment thesis right now is that we're going to have a strong dollar wave. So in there, I'll have things like a short against the 10-year treasury bond or something like that. These are shorter term investments meant to, you know, kind of capture short term countercyclical waves within the markets.
Sounds lovely, mm-hmm. Especially the combination, because gold is the true asset that people yep. keep to preserve capital.
Right.
And like a chat I had earlier this morning, war is one of the few things we're all doing mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I believe very strongly in gold. I always have, and it's but at the same time, it's hard to invest in such a way that you can actually generate revenue, right? Generate a yield mm-hmm. that is, you know, it's not just generating a positive rate of return. It's more generating cash yield, because this is a crisis industry where there's going to be a lot of geopolitical upheaval. It's going to have spillover effects in the monetary system mm-hmm. and everything else. And so you want to be generating cash on a regular basis so that, you know, you can take advantage of volatility both, you know, to the up and down side, where you can, you know, redeploy over time and always have a good source of cash flow with which to then figure out which area of your portfolio should you be deploying that cash that you're getting. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, a couple of stocks in my portfolio that pay out on a monthly basis for that, you know, for that purpose, so that you can either, you know, pull
that's always correct.
Right. So you can pull a streaming income if you need to, because maybe you lost your job, or, you know, the kid needed braces, or, hey, I want to invest in this penny stock because it looks like gold will back $50. And I can throw a couple hundred bucks at this penny stock that I have. Because on top of all that, then what I call the found money list on the side, which is where we put like cryptocurrencies, high risk cryptocurrencies and exploration stocks that I, or, you know, penny stocks that I think are, have a lot of long term potential upside. So that's where you'll find mining stocks and whatnot.
Sounds interesting. Let's have a look at the geopolitics.
Sure.
You're based in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume you're an American passport holder.
Oh yeah.
I'm just checking.
I'm an American citizen. Actually, I've only been out of the country I think once. I'm a kind of typical American, unfortunately, that I've never been able to travel. Between time and circumstances. So,
Donald Trump is your president.
Yes, he is. For better or worse, I voted for him. I'll be upfront and frank about it. At the same time, I always knew that he mixed bag. And that, from a geopolitical perspective, I was hoping, being a staunch libertarian, I was hoping that I would get the non-interventionist portion of his platform that would be real, and that he wouldn't be mm-hmm. Seduced by the Washington swamp, who cares more about foreign policy stability, which is invade the world, invest in the world, kind of. Idiocy.
Make it a mess.
Yeah, making a mess everywhere. Pepe Escobar likes to call the empire of chaos. If you read Pepe, he's right. And at the same time, I knew that, you know, they'd let him play at the edges of domestic policy, knowing full well that our domestic policy is completely off the rails, and so he can remake the tax structure, bringing home the foreign capital that's having to sit overseas because it's being taxed at way too high a rate. And those are all things that I have no problem with. And I was even giving Trump a pass on a lot of the kind of geopolitical blundering early on, because I wasn't sure if he was playing a kind of Nixonian crazy Ivan routine, right? And I think in some ways he still is, but it's far beyond that now. In the last 4 to 6 weeks, his attitudes toward Syria and Iran, that situation over there, they're wholly unacceptable. And they just look like he's changed for the worse, and had to kind of review his record over the last 18 months. And I'm not happy with what I see. And I'm refusing to put my rose-colored glasses on and continue to hope, because I don't really believe in hope. I believe in action, right?
I always say, when I believe in a reasonable rate of return.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've also been known to say that hope is the most negative of all emotions, because hope is the one thing you have when you have nothing else. And you can't, as an investor, you can't hope. You have to have numbers, and you have to have relative certainty. And if you go in knowing that certain markets are high risk, and the commodity markets are high risk inherently. But at the same time.
What are you doing to downplay the high risk in the commodity markets?
By looking at not buying the people who make the commodities, but by making money off of the people who move commodities. Because generally, in times of of deflation, and certainly during the countercyclical portion during the down portion of the trend, and over the course of the entire cycle, the people who move commodities around generally make more money than the people who actually find them and pull them out of the ground and then sell them. And so you'd rather be invested in shipping MLPs, for example, over the long run, than you would want to be in, some wildcat driller out in the Permian, right? I'm a bigger fan of frac sand companies, than I am of the oil producers themselves, right? Because they can't operate without the sand.
It's a great talking, that at the gold rush, the only people who really made money out of them were the people who rented the housing, sold the food, and sold the stuff.
Right. I look at the gold portfolio, sub-portfolio, as kind of like, if I can tell people, go invest in rental property locally or some really boring local business, like, I don't know, the car wash company or the
supermarket.
Right, the local supermarket chain. The local supermarket chain that needs $15,000 to put a new cold room in off the back, and you can, take a 5% equity stake in the company and pull a 25% return on it every year. You're better off than going into the S&P 500. That takes real work, right? I can't really recommend that to people. So I have to start thinking in terms of listed stocks and try and keep it. It is a retail investor focused newsletter. It's not for the professional. I don't do trade alerts per se. I'm looking more to give people like an almost fire and forget 5-year time horizon portfolio, because most people, one, don't have the time and the expertise to understand 90% of what we professionals do understand. We have to kind of distill all that knowledge down into just really simple nuggets of good information. And then when you do a company profile, you can get into their balance sheet and their earnings and try and teach, right, how to read a balance sheet, how to read an earnings report and whatnot. But your main goal is to give people, solid investments. You're not going to pick 100% of the stocks, you're going to pick 100% of the time right. But as long as, you hit 65-70%, you're doing, one, you're doing better than most hedge fund managers anyway. And two,
definitely.
And two, you're going to be up about 35% on one stock. You might be down 25% on the other. But overall, the portfolio is giving you a decent rate of return. And as when I was doing this for Newsmax, because I used to work for Newsmax and write the Resolute Wealth letter for them, it was the same thing. And my portfolio, once I had it laid out, was pulling off a 7% cash yield every year. It's cash.
That's really good.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter if the underlying assets were off, a few points here. The portfolio overall was kind of flat, but the thing was pulling 7% in the commodity markets. It's hard to argue with that. I would say it's hard to argue with that.
Most retail investors have a savings account, and most of my listeners have one. Go to your bank, ask them. I want 7% interest rate.
Yeah. Trying to get 7% in a zero bound interest rate market, right? Are you in Europe?
Yes.
Okay. Where in Europe?
At the moment, the Netherlands.
Okay.
Heading for a long weekend of barbecues, parties, and celebration, because we have a few days off.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Fantastic.
A lot of fish on the barbecue.
Nice.
Looking forward to it.
I like that.
Me too. Only one chat with the customer tomorrow, and then the fire is on.
Awesome, excellent.
Yeah,
I work 7 days a week because I can't stop. If I take more than 24 hours off looking at the geopolitics, I get lost. As a matter of fact, when we get done with this call, I've got at least 3 articles to write this afternoon just to try and keep up with what's happening. So,
it's extremely tough to keep up to date with all the geopolitical stuff in the world.
It really is.
I mean, just look at what Trump is doing at the moment.
And not just Trump, but and think about what's happening on a daily basis with the Italians.
China?
Try the Italians.
Forget the Italians.
Yeah.
I would say the country is bankrupt.
Well, I know that's what I mean, but it is, okay? And it's been bankrupt for quite a while now, and the ECB has been the marginal buyer, the only buyer of Italian debt for quite a while now. And both Salvini and Di Maio, the leaders of the League and Five Star Movement, understand this. The problem is that Brussels refuses to admit it, because if they give any kind of debt relief to Italy, then Deutsche Bank blows up, or you know, and then the whole house of cards starts to fall down. And that's the primary investment thesis that I'm trying to bring to people, is that I think the sovereign debt crisis in the world is, we're on the verge of one, and that it's going to start in Europe because, well, the Italians, the Portuguese, Greece, the Spanish.
The interesting part, a lot of people forget, if you look at the Greece government debt, if Greece is just basically our party country, we go to the party and that's it.
Right.
If they go bankrupt and default on the debt, the ECB is bankrupt.
Yes, exactly. That's why they won't allow debt relief. They just keep pushing it off into the future, and then every once in a while, I mean, honestly, what happened in 2015 was what Germany did. Was reprehensible, because they not only refused to really fix the problem, but then they also demanded that Greece turn over as collateral for all of this debt, quote unquote debt relief, all of the infrastructure in Greece. So, like, the Germans own they own all the ports now, and it's horrible. And it was done in such a way, and I don't, you know, and it was done in such a way, as far as I was concerned, it was done with their eyes open. And I as an outsider looking at the internal politics of and the internal structure of the EU, it seems to me, and I've been a harsh critic of Germany on German policy on this, is that I think that German labor is more efficient than $1.20, than a euro trading at $1.17, right? It's actually at $1.17, German labor is actually underpriced in the market. But at $1.17, Greek labor is horribly overpriced. And so there's no fundamental way for Greece to grow themselves out of this market, this problem that they're in. Same thing with Italy. Their labor may be worth 70 cents to the dollar.
And if you would fix the European debt problems, how would you fix it?
By allowing all those countries to leave the euro and allow the euro to represent what it truly represents politically, which is the relatively fiscally solvent northern European countries, like the Netherlands and Germany.
Which is also bankrupt.
Well, in its own way, they're all bankrupt. But I mean, you can't fix it per se. But you have to do one thing or the other. You have to let those countries go. If you want to preserve, because if they don't, the whole European Union structure is going to collapse completely, and it's going to wind up being a northern currency block at the end of it all. Anyway, I think these countries are all going to leave. They have to leave. Because it's the only way they're going to survive. And you know what's interesting is that's happening this morning. Looking at the intersection between Donald Trump and Europe, is I'm just looking at all the headlines this morning of the Europeans standing tall, which I was not actually expecting. I was expecting them to eventually roll over against the increased sanctions against Iran and trying to hold on to the Iran nuclear deal. So if Europe does this. And I think Germany and the European Union have to do this. They need to forge a separate identity from the United States at this point and look east to Russia, who was supplying them with all the cheap gas you guys would ever want for the rest of your lives, and make it and just happily. I think Medvedev tweeted everybody a couple weeks ago when he said, "I don't know why you guys are fighting about Nord Stream 2 with the rate at which the North Sea output is dropping. You guys are going to need Nord Stream 3 within a decade." So and other pipelines as well. I mean, if you're going to run your first world economy on gas, then you have to have stable gas supplies, and it can't come from unbelievably expensive American LNG. That's just not going to cut it.
And the interesting part is here in the Netherlands, we have Slochter, so actually we are a big gas producer.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that in a few years we're going to be a net importer of gas instead of an exporter.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Medvedev mentioned the Netherlands, the Groningen field is dropping, the output is dropping
And they are literally closing everything down, and they are basically they're now trying to push people to go off the gas, which I always say, well, we make the Dutch government made a fortune with the gas, and they are trying all types of experiments like burn wood, like they did in the dark century.
Like in the 17th century, we're going to go back to burning wood. There are no aren't very many forests left in Europe because you guys burned them all in order to heat yourselves during the last cold, during the last global cooling cycle.
The interesting part is that they were using waste from wood just for it, but that's now gone. So now we are breaking down Canada, getting the wood from Canada on the boat.
And we're going to burn. Yeah. We're going to buy Canadian. We're going to buy Canadian hardwoods and burn them because you guys don't want to go nuclear.
I would just get me just in the Netherlands 50 new nuclear plants. Just buy it.
I mean, but they can't be these horrible old style GE Gen 1 plants. They really need to be these Gen 3, Gen 4 Russian plants. The Russians have tremendously safe versions of designs in their latest Gen 3, Gen 4 designs are very, very safe relative to the. It's not like the ones that melted down in Fukushima. Those are all should have been torn down 20 years ago, and so in some ways, you know, Germany was right and wanted to. And I'm really torn on nuclear power. I mean, look.
Me too. I mean, I love nukes.
I live like right down there. I live within an hour of the Crystal River nuclear power plant, here in Florida. We enjoy relatively cheap power here. Even though I live rurally, we have, we're paying like less than 20, like we're just around 12 cents a kilowatt hour, thanks to the nuke plant. And I understand that, you know, the base load in the United States is that keeps the lights on all the time is all nuclear, right? Our base load. And it all comes, by the way, from Russian uranium because the Russians, the ones own the downstream market, right?
And that was just what I was intending to mention. I mean, how would you enrich it? If I was the US, I would be really nice to Russia.
No!
Because
I read an article last year. It was the first one that I ever got scraped to zero hedge. It was the Russians have the sanctions hammer with uranium. And you'll notice that Trump has never gone after – he hasn't gone after uranium or titanium because he can't. Because without without uranium, we don't have a base load. And without titanium, we have no aircraft.
Yeah, and the interesting part is if a few weeks ago someone suggested to me that you'd simply buy a new enrichment factory, just build one, and just said, yeah, sure, going to cost you a few billion, it's never going to become profitable, and takes you a decade.
Right. With the environmental regulations and everything else, and France is the only other real heavy supplier of single work units in the uranium market. So, but the Russians own like 70% of the downstream uranium market. I mean, they produce. It's insane, and so that's why I don't worry about this tiff between this new Cold War between Putin and the United States. Putin understands the long term ramifications of it. He understands his long term positioning. So does Xi in China, and honestly, so does Rouhani in Iran. And so the United States is going to bluff and bluster here as much as possible, and they're going to push for regime change in Iran. And if they don't get it within the next 6 to 8 weeks, then this whole high pressure campaign will fall apart, and then they will win the financial war of attrition, and that's all they're doing right now. They're playing. This is like financial Stalingrad, is what they're the way the Russians are doing. You being European, you understand this kind of better than I do, how the Russians operate, because you know you've lived with them right there, and y'all have lived through multiple world wars. And I didn't.
And the interesting part about the world wars that people always forget is that Russia was never the aggressor.
Right. They were just the ones.
We went to Russia. We were the ones going there.
And they're the ones that
cleaned up the mess. That's why I understand that Putin is really freaking out about every military action in Poland and Mongolia. Mm-hmm. Because every time they were invaded, they came through Poland or to Mongolia.
Right. Right. And he's just if you study military, if you're a Russian and you study military history, you understand you understand where your enemies are. It's silly. And the leadership in the United States is still operating, I think, with a massive generational bias of baby boomers who grew up during the Cold War. And they cannot let go of it. People like John McCain and others, you know, once they're gone, things will break. But it's going to take a while for a lot of these people to leave power. And for it to wind down. And I'm not sure that there's any help for it. I mean, until that's why I think that the current leadership in those countries have a historical perspective that is correct. If you listen to Putin's not his inauguration speech, but his acceptance speech or the speech, right? The State of the Union address, where he announced all those new weapons. He kept talking, and he has been for a while now, talking about the next 50 years and setting Russia up for the next 25 to 50 years. And Xi is doing the same thing. And
the interesting part is I'm planning a trip to Russia, and they're basically going to inspect the weapon factories on invitation of the Russian government. Mm.
Wow.
I just contacted the Investment Promotions Agency. I'm finalizing a report about making money on a war.
Right.
And I simply said, we're going to get a war. Let's go neutral.
Right.
Let's be Switzerland. So yeah. I want to check all everything, also on your side.
Right.
And the interesting part is that if you want to enter a factory in the US or just go to a shareholder meeting, tough safety regulations.
Oh, yeah.
The Russians just said, give me your passport. And do you going to grab your Dutch or your Israeli passport for the trip?
Wow.
just to get the paperwork in order.
Now, although the United States has become insane. It's become it really has. And my wife and I have seriously been discussing, when we're talking about a major investment move, you start thinking about when you're advising people what to do with their money during a crisis period, you have to ask yourself, are you making the right choices with your money? And are you walking the same walk? Right. You know, it's one thing to talk the talk. It's another thing to walk the walk. And I firmly believe in leading and walking the walk first and leading by example, because that's the only way you gain authenticity and credibility with people over time. And we've seriously been discussing the idea of, going, if we're going to live through this strong dollar wave that I think is coming, that I actually think started on like Monday, then, we should really consider, it using those strong dollars to our best advantage by leaving. And if that means, going and living overseas or going and living, finding a spot in Central or South America that we can live cheaply and we can live, well, then it makes a lot of sense, because you want to play that currency. That's one of those currency hedges that you play, because, if you've got, you've got a couple hundred thousand dollars in assets or $300,000 or $400,000 in assets, generating you income, and your baseline in America is that you need 50 grand a year to live. For a family of three, it's not easy to live middle class in the United States. And I think, honestly, if you live trying to live, like I do, like kind of rural middle class, it's hard to live and properly set yourself up for retirement and everything else. It costs almost 50 grand a year to live minimum. $4,000 a month is not living well in the United States. Okay.
Terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible. But you can, you can move to Central Mexico and you can live like a king for $2,000 a month.
And just for you to check out, check the country of Vanuatu.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of it?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's really smart what their government is doing there, and it's really cheap living.
Right.
If you make enough money from investments or something else, mm-hmm. that you don't have to work there, they can give you a passport. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part of the citizenships is that you can get visa-free trips to Russia and China.
Mm. Wow.
Actually considering to getting one of those passports and just give up my Dutch one.
Right. Wow. The weird part about that is, of course, and don't get me wrong, is that, still having here family here in the United States and friends and wanting to, you can't give up your American passport. Because the United States fundamentally believes that they have the right to tax you no matter where you make your money anywhere in the world, which is fundamentally tyrannical. Right. I mean, taxes are theft. But let's talk about this, that at this point in time, the United States now taxes all income, foreign and domestic, because they want it all because they're going broke. So
they need it.
They're functionally broke. And the banking system is broke, been broke for since 1971. And now it was really went broke in 2008. And it's just a matter of time here. And the cycles are all aligning, I think, for this period, 2018 to 2021, are going to be just crazy in terms of what we're going to see in the markets and what we're going to see geopolitically and the changing borders and the changing – the governments are going to fall.
So what are you expecting on changes on the geopolitical side, and what do you should people do to make money out of it or simply survive it?
I think you survive. I think well, there's going to be fabulous opportunities, but I think it's going to be in the high risk side of things. Okay. I think that, you know, there's going to be money, a lot more money to be made in cryptos. I'm going to be frank and honest. There's going to be a lot of money made in gold, right? But this is all high risk stuff that you have to keep your head about, and how much of your net worth you're going to put into it. You know, you're not going to put more. You shouldn't be putting more than, you know, 1% of your liquid assets, or, you know, 5% of your liquid assets. I mean, the money you would take to Vegas with you, right? That's the money you're putting in cryptos. And if you make a bunch of money and you take that initial stake off the table and you let it ride. Same thing with gold, like gold mining companies and whatnot. You know, you take your initial investment, your initial stake in these companies, and then, you know, you get that when you get a double, you take that off the table and you let it ride, and you play with that money, and then you just don't care at that point, and you deploy those assets in other places, and you diversify your portfolio that way after you've made profits. Mm-hmm. These do gold when masters behind a dollar over the course of the next say 2 years, and then after, and during the gold rise, there's other crisis in Europe. The benefit of gas is going to change. Okay.
And
where we're going to get a different offset being bond and gold stock, could be, you know, blue chip stocks are going to be your safe haven investment in major. And we're talking about first world blue chips. We're talking about the U.S., mm-hmm. Germany, to a lesser extent, the U.K. If Brexit goes through, in the U.K. is a great place to park cash. Even like the Nikkei is going to do well. Certainly Shanghai, certainly China will do. China stock market will do well as well. But then the sleeper in all of this is the Russians, because it's a terminally under valued stock market, and it's such a small capital base, because, you know, you can buy the whole MiSEX for less than, you know, what's $800 billion. I mean, the entire Russian stock market is less than $800 billion. It's nothing, right? It's smaller than Apple at this point, for Christ's sake. So, but
that's really weird.
It is really weird. And so when you really stop to think about that, right? But the big money is going to be fleeing chaos here in Europe, in your neck of the woods, and I don't envy you. Your situation. We're going to get the chaos after you guys do, right? We're going to see the political unrest in the 2021-2024 period is where we're going to see it. But that strong dollar wave is what's going to bankrupt the system, and all that chaos is going to send the money screaming into the U.S. markets, and because they're the only markets deep enough really to take that capital flow, and it'll be absolutely about return of your money, not the return on your money. But there's going to be good opportunities. There are good opportunities if you're in the right markets to make some really strong, solid returns. And gold is going to do well once the faith in the central banks and the credibility of the central banks really is punctured. And I think the ECB is very close to that moment.
And not only that, I mean, last Monday I had a small party, because I have two passports, and Israel was 70. I got Israel passport, mm-hmm. and we were chatting about it, and they were just saying from other people. And I love politics, mm-hmm. so that aldermen and city council members pull by for a barbecue is normal.
Right.
And we were having a chat, and they were just saying, we just had a debate from why you want two passports, and I just said, well, we get the war.
Right.
Every time in Europe, when Germany was really strong, mm-hmm. they start a war.
Right.
I want to go away. I don't want to lose my head.
I know you're absolutely right. You don't want to be there, and you have to figure out ways of making sure you can get your capital out of the country, right? This morning the headline on Zero Hedge was that, you know, we've seen over $1.5 billion in transactions of people, of Iranians trying to get their money out of Iran in Bitcoin, right, in cryptos. That we're seeing capital flow out of Iran into cryptos. The same thing we saw in China in 2013, you know, which this mm-hmm. That was the first. That was the first thing that sent Bitcoin over $1,000, which was capital flight out of China, when the yuan was breaking down and they were going through, you know, corporate debt defaults and whatnot, and the PBOC had to intervene, and there was all sorts of stuff happening. So we're seeing that in Europe too. I saw this all last year, and we're seeing it now, that the capital flow through the crypto markets coming out of Europe, out of European IPs, is pretty high. And I don't have specific numbers on them, but I was watching them for a week or two, and it was just, you know, most transactions were coming out of the EU, and that's when the euro was strengthening. Now the euro is starting to fall over. Now the debt yields are starting to rise. You know, the Italian debts are they're trying desperately to manage the headline cycle here to keep the belly of the Italian yield curve from just blowing out to the upside. But CDS spreads are rising, right? For you know all pigs debt, I think it's up to an average of 145 basis points now. So it's expensive. Yeah, it is. It's getting expensive. So you know all the markers are there, and so now it's just a matter of. You know, what are Salvini and Di Maio going to put on the table and then try and force down Merkel's throat? And she doesn't have the political mandate. She has the political mandate to not give them anything. So, because that's what the German election said. So we, you know, rock meet hard place. Now Salvini and Di Maio have to go back to the Italian people and say, look, I know you don't necessarily want us to leave the euro, but we don't really have any other choice if you want us to implement our platform. And this is actually the article I need to write once I get off the phone with you. I need to make that argument this morning and put it out there because that's what I think they're going to do next. That's how I think they're going to try and sell this, and then it's going to set up a really nasty fight. And I also think that they're going to push for lifting the Russian sanctions, and that they're going to instruct their finance minister to not vote along with to continue the Russian sanctions over Crimea. And if that happens, Katie bar the door, the whole thing starts to explode. And
oh yeah, definitely, and that means profit opportunity. Yeah. Just hope that I'm not then here and lose my head for my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing.
No, yeah. I think that it'll be interesting. It'll be a great opportunity. I think at that point, if the Europeans drop the sanctions, at that point, you know, the Russian stock market is already trading at an all-time high. And it just put in its highest weekly close on Friday of all time. Mm-hmm. I think it's just getting started. I think that was a nice little consolidation period, and it's going to continue going higher. And I think that the other thing to look for. Is and I've been advising people for 2 years privately, not in my newsletter, but privately. Like in 2015, I was telling people, screaming at people to buy Russian debt at 11%, screaming at them to buy Russian 5 years or 10 years at 10.5%, 11%, because it's trading at 6.5% now. And the Russian central bank needs to drop interest rates by at least 1.5%.
Ooh.
Yeah. She's that far behind the curve. When you look at the Russian yield curve this morning, you'll see that it's flat from overnight to 1 year, which is where the central bank has control, and then everything from 1 year forward are all sovereign debt bonds that they've sold. But all the rest of it is just an expression of the interbank market, and that's all like literally at the bound of where she's got interest rates. Nebelina has interest rates right now, and all the Russian debt is selling. At lower than 7%, with a nicely rising yield curve, right? From 1 year out to 20 years, you know, it starts at like 6.3% and goes out to about 6.9%, and that spread is rising as the recovery takes over. So all she really has to do here is continue to aggressively drop interest rates, which she doesn't want to do because for a long time she was in the pay of the IMF, and I'm firmly convinced that she was a fifth columnist working for American. Concerns and Putin finally put her in the headlock a year and a half ago and said, you will start lowering interest rates or I will unleash the economic nationalists on you who are my advisors. And those are the guys like Sergei Gaziev and the Stolypin group and others. And I just think Russia's just waiting to explode to the upside once we get past all this political risk. So.
Okay, and then one final thing. Where can we find more about your publication?
Sure. You can find my work over at goldgoatsandguns.com. That's gold, goats, and guns with an N, not an and. You can also – it also goes to tomluongo.me. You can follow me on Twitter at TFL1728. I do have a YouTube channel as well where I do live streams on a pretty regular basis. Just search Gold, Goats, and Guns, and you'll find me eventually. And I also publish on Steemit. Under the handle at Gold Goats and Guns, and all of that stuff is available at my website. And I also have a Patreon where you can sign up for the Gold Goats and Guns investment newsletter for $12 a month. Just go to my website and follow the links to Patreon.
Okay, then I would say a big thanks for the interview.
Oh, thank you very much for the invite. I truly had a great time.
Honor on my side, always great to have lovely, creative and critical.
Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+, but how to use them in your advantage. Get yourself the social media expert course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. Hofprofit.com/smm. I say hofprofit.com/smm.
What do you say about that? Was that not a great thing? Is this not really a thing? I mean, if you look at it, how he talks about nuclear energy and Russia, it's also great things. It's, well, this is one of the reasons why you need to have a subscription on my show. So, having that said, I'm extremely honored to have you on. Let me know what you think about it. I look forward to hearing your comments. You can tweet them. You can find it almost everywhere. I really hope you had the same fun as I had. And I will not be here tomorrow. That's for an easy reason. I have to go to the hospital. I also have appointments at two ministries in the Netherlands, and I will give you a long report on Friday where we debate everything. And for the rest, we are gonna, I don't know what it is for me today. It's, I feel miserable. That's why we go to the hospital. No, I have a lot of fun. I will put the barbecue on and throw the sardines on, and I would simply say I will talk to you on Friday, and I would say cheers.